Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. Come in.
Your show will start in 5 seconds.
Jeez. If you knew how sick we were of hearing that. More about that later. I'm Dale K from Spook Show here along with...
Along with me and my shadow, Dave Bigley from the weirdest Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One. And Dale, no matter what I do, this guy follows me everywhere. Everywhere.
Won't leave you alone, huh?
Will not. You know, right. You know. Last night we were surprised. I was surprised anyway. When that second tale from the Weird Circle, of course, I said a lot of that was from old stories that essentially were in public domain, so they didn't have to pay for the story, and they just adapted it. And Gar told us that that was from Hans Christian Andersen. The most famous poem in the world about shadows. I'm going to read that, and you're going to tell me who wrote this. Okay, I have a little shadow that goes in and out with me. And what can be the use of him is more than I can see. He is very, very like me from my head up to my head, or heels up to my head. And I see him jump before me when I jump into my bed. The funniest thing about him is the way he likes to grow. Not at all like proper children, which is always very slow. For he sometimes shoots up taller, like an India rubber ball. He sometimes gets so little that there's none of him at all. He hasn't got a notion of how children ought to play, and can only make a fool of me in every sort of way. He stays so close beside me, he's a coward, you can see. I think shame to stick to nursie as that shadow sticks to me. One morning very early, before the sun was up, I rose and found the shining dew on every buttercup. But my lazy little shadow, like an arrogant sleepy head, had stayed at home behind me and was fast asleep in bed. So, your guest, the surprise author.
I'm going to guess Theodore Geisel.
No.
Dr. Seuss.
Any guesses in the chat room? All right, here it is. Guess what? Here it comes. Robert Louis Stevenson wrote that.
Good heavens, that's not what you'd expect.
It's a poem. It's a poem that we've all heard. At least you know the first part of it is something that we all know, and we've all heard it at one point or other. And just as surprised as I was at that first story or the second story yesterday. Was from Hans Christian Andersen. Here we are with a poem by Robert Louis Stevenson.
Yep, we get all the classics here. Plus, we had Bob Hope in here with an episode of Suspense. That was yesterday here on Eerie House Radio, which we even forgot to mention we were doing right now. In our intro, it just occurred to me, did I ever say what show that this is? I don't think I did. Well, there you have it, Eerie House Radio, and tonight we're continuing with more shadowy stories. One from Inner Sanctum and The Hermit's Cave. Two fun, classic, creepy shows.
You sound a little hollow there, Dave, but Dale. Yes, indeed, The Hermit's Cave and the... Hermit's Cave and Inner Sanctum. Yes.
Sanctum. Yes.
Yes. Lost my place here, and I don't even know where my place is anymore. I'm here so often. How the heck could I get lost?
But, I don't know. But we've got Inner Sanctum's tale is called The Shadow of Death.
Gar said that's a really good one. He thinks The Hermit's Cave was a really strange one. I don't know. I mean, they're all scary stories. We've had scary, well, except for the Bob Hope. It was a suspenseful one. But all other of our other four stories, I think are wonderfully spooky.
Yeah. Quick hello to all three of our folks in the chat with us. Fogsbane, Serpent Society 9 and GGSI Paper. Thanks for joining us.
Yep. And if you didn't listen, I got a chance to listen last night when we were on. I had a wonderful visit with Professor Feather. And he came on. He was in the chat for all of the game. Then he came on and talked. And then we had another conversation went on. Hour almost, I think. I'm not sure. It was another 35 minutes that we all talked. And I think that it was very interesting. So even if you heard last night's, go into the archives and catch the afterbirth there. And we have a lot of extra fun there as well. But tonight, the Hermit's Cave and Inner Sanctum Mysteries.
Yeah, I love these shows. The Hermit's Cave is actually very early in radio history.
Yeah, starting in the late 1930s, like 1937. And another one of these shows that kind of started in Detroit. There are, you never think of Detroit as a hub of great programs from old time radio. But you know what? It was. You had the Lone Ranger. You had the Green Hornet. You had Sergeant Preston of the Yukon. You had the Hermit's Cave. These are all programs that came out of Detroit. And Cleveland had Fairy Tale Theater. That was it. Come on. What's wrong with these people?
That's all right. We're holding a crown with horror hosts.
We are. Yes, we are.
So life is not that bad.
So, yeah, and basically running through the mid-40s and came back again in 1950 to Detroit. But it kind of an interesting story as we get into that. Of course, Inner Sanctum Mysteries, who was on the NBC, started off as only because Carter's Little Liver Pills. Wanted to sponsor an NBC Red Network, which is that was the one where all the big shows were on, said, we can't have your product on our network. And so Hyman Brown said, well, I'll take him on Blue, and he did, and that's where, we got the Inner Sanctum. But not only did it go to Blue, it did go to Red, and then eventually ended up on ABC Radio to finish out its run, as well as, of course, many of the programs making the Armed Forces radio to keep the night guards up looking behind them, I guess, in the armed force there.
Where would we like to start tonight, Dave?
Why don't we start with the older of the two, and they started earlier. Why don't we go there to good old Hermit's Cave? Hermit's Cave. Starting as a 15-minute program, then when they got a new sponsor for Olga Cole, they went to the half-hour format and never left that. Again, starting out of WJRAM Detroit in 42, and the broadcast, what did they do? The shows were recorded. Then a week later, they would end up in WBBM in Chicago, Illinois. A 43 transcription of the WJR version of the program were also being broadcast in 8 additional cities. Now, the California, they were taking the same scripts, but they were recording them on their own. And they broadcast it from 1940 to 44 with William Conrad. One of his first jobs in radio was as a producer on that show. And, of course, one of the many people that played the Hermit was the great John Daner. So that was probably the first time those two worked together. And William Conrad was kind of responsible for it. It had a run of, I think, like 800 shows, over 800 episodes. There are only about 40 of them that have survived, but over 800 shows were produced.
Amazing. So, and they're all pretty creepy. One of our early radio horror hosts, the Hermit.
And there is no, with all the various resources that I checked out, including the Digital Deli 2, nobody has a specific exact date for this one, Dale.
All right, so we can pin this down to sometime in 1939, maybe?
I think this is more from sometime in 1940, but can't nail it down any closer than that.
From a long time ago, here comes Hermit's Cave with House of the Purple Shadows.
The Mummers in the Little Theater of the Air. Your lights. Turn them out. Ah, have you heard the story? The House of Purple Shadows? Then listen while the hermit tells you the story.
Yesterday we weren't so alarmed. When he didn't come to the office this morning, but then we concluded something must be wrong.
He's here in the house. We'll find out in a minute, Benson. Yeah.
It's dark in this hallway, Mr. Lamont.
Must be a light switch here somewhere. Ah, yes, here it is.
Ah, there. That's better.
Hasn't been sleeping here at this house for over a year.
No, but they said at the club that he wasn't there yesterday. Hadn't slept in his room there last night.
Well, in that case, he may be here.
That's what I'm afraid of. Maybe he had a stroke or something and wasn't able to get to a phone.
We look upstairs first.
Yes, I think we'd better.
Here's the stairway. It's queer, isn't it? If he came here in the evening, wouldn't he have left some lights on?
That's what I was thinking. It's gloomy in this house. No wonder he shut it all up and went to live at the club after his wife died.
Mr. Davison has always been a peculiar man. I haven't been his attorney as long as I have without realizing that.
Do you know what bedroom is his?
Yes, I think this one. At least we'll try this room first.
Is it locked?
No, it just seems to stick. Must be the door is swell.
Let me try it, Mr. Lamont.
Oh, I'm getting it now. Here it comes.
Gee whiz.
What's the matter, Benson?
I don't know, but when you opened the door, it was as if something grabbed a hold of my hand.
What?
Well, I know it sounds queer, but it was as if an icicle touched me.
It's just the cold air rushing out of this room. It's as black as night in here. Curtains and drapes are heavily drawn. Now, if I can find a light in here.
Oh, here it is, Mr. Lamont.
He's not in here.
No, not here. Maybe this isn't his room.
If he's going to stay in the house, he'd sleep in here.
This room hasn't been touched for a long time, has it?
Well, I guess not.
Mr. Lamont, isn't it queer that this room should be so cold?
Well, no, there's nothing strange about that. A room that's all closed up gets damp and cold.
I have a feeling that it's going to start snowing in here any minute. This cold air seems to freeze your very blood.
Mr. Benson, I don't think your employer stayed in this house night before last. I don't think anyone's been in this house for a long time.
Well, then, where is he?
I don't know. We look in the other rooms up here. Turn off his light.
Shall we close the door?
Yes, leave everything just as we found it. If he finds out that we've been snooping around up here, he may not like it. He's very peculiar.
I know, but certainly he'd want us to hunt for him if he thought we were worried. If we thought he was lying up here dead.
He doesn't like people prying into his affairs.
That's true.
Yeah, we're looking this upstairs library. If he's not in there, well then, means he's not here in the house.
Yes. What was that?
Sounded like a moan.
Yes, it did. Mr. Davison, where are you? Mr. Davison?
Mr. Davison, where are you? Well, he's not here in the library.
No, it sounded as if it came from downstairs.
Yes, I guess it did. Hurry, let's get down there.
Yes. Mr. Davison, where are you?
He's not here in the living room.
No, but we heard a moan from somewhere.
Sounded like it.
Mr. Lamont, look. Look, do you see what I'm pointing at?
Where?
That book on the table. It moved. It moved all by itself.
What?
It did. I saw it. I saw it. It moved from one side of the table to the other.
Nonsense. That's impossible.
My eyes aren't playing me tricks that badly. I saw it move. Come over here. Look. You see? where it's been lying.
Imprint in the dust?
Yes. No, it's over here.
Wait a minute. This is getting a little too deep for me.
Oh.
Benson, what's the matter now?
I felt that touch on my hand again. I did.
Hey, there is something queer going on in here. Look. Look over there at the window. You see that?
Yes. Yeah.
It's like someone was touching those drapes and making the move.
Yes. Mr. Lamont, let's get out of here. Let's get out. Hurry.
Right.
They couldn't see me. They couldn't hear my voice. Isn't there anyone who can hear me speak? Oh, if you know how badly I needed help, how hard I tried to make them hear me. You people who are of the world and know it. You who can step to the mirror, look in it, and see your face and body reflected there. Oh, how thankful you should be. Just a few moments ago, I managed to propel myself to the mirror in the hall. I looked into it. I stood directly in front of it. There was nothing there. I have no face, no body, no arms, no hands. And yet a sound came from whatever it is that I am, like a moan. My lawyer, Mr. Lamont, and my bookkeeper, Mr. Benson, came rushing down the stairs. I could see them. But great heaven, they couldn't see me. I called out, "Help me! Help me!" But they went out the door, slammed it shut, left me here alone. Oh, doomed to what? Isn't there anyone who can tell me what's happened to me? 2 days ago, yes, I can still reckon days, I left the office and went to the club. It was about an hour before dinner. I sat reading the paper. Suddenly all the letters began to jump and dance before my eyes. And I distinctly heard something whispering in my ears.
Go to your house. Go to your house.
I threw down the paper. No one seemed to be watching me. I was so frightened I felt I must be ill. But I couldn't tell anyone in the club. There was a buzzing in my ears. And I could hear that voice saying,
"Go to your house. Go to your house."
I walked out the door down the street. Some power seemed to be forcing me to go. I walked fast. I approached my house. I haven't lived in it since my wife died. I looked up at it. It seemed to be weaving back and forth. Black clouds hung over it. I walked up the steps. I reached the outside door. Mechanically, I took the key from my pocket, inserted it in the lock, opened the door. I stood inside. Now, why was I here? Why had I come to the house? I didn't know. I walked into the living room. Suddenly, I felt a great rush of cold wind. It engulfed me, whirled round me, seemed to be wrapping itself about me. Help! Help! What is it? Help! Help! My body is freezing. My blood has turned to ice. Help! 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 I can't move! I can't move. I couldn't move. The room seemed to be bathed in a purple twilight. It was then that I realized that I no longer had a physical body. I seemed to see everything in the room but myself. Look down at your hand and arm. Realize what it would mean to have the feeling of it, but not be able to see it. Can you imagine such torture? I can make things move, but I can't see the hand that moves them. Oh, horrible, terrible calamity that has befallen me. How long am I going to go on like this? What sort of a world am I living in? In the purple shadows between this and the next. Someone have mercy on me. Help me. Great heaven, someone help me.
Well, that blows. The wind, that is. as he's in a strange, strange world, very frightening world. it is an odd story, and I just enjoyed this a few days ago. Had this one on a disc in my car. So glad to share.
Okay.
Glad to share it with the folks. Fogs Bane, GGSI Paper, CW joins us, as does Serpent Society 9. We know who you are.
Yep. But yes, odd tale, yes, but interesting. He can see what is happening around him and everybody, and hear what they're saying, but they can't see him. A touch of cold wind is all he is.
A living shadow, as it were, and we're going to find out what happens to him in just a few minutes.
Yep. Throughout the years, the voice of the Hermit was portrayed by various actors, starting with John Kent, later by Charles Penman, Toby Grimer, Clock Rider, Mel Johnson, and out on the West Coast there, John Daner. But yeah, and you know, it wasn't like today. You know, sometimes when somebody gets picked up by a show and you say, well, okay, well, you know, this is what you'll always be remembered for. I don't know that stuck with people as long as it might today. And although nobody wants to get pigeonholed, it's always nice, I guess, to be remembered for something. When you enter Sanctum, you have Raymond Edward Johnson and Paul McGrath. And they were really known as the hosts. They did other things. They acted in other things. But they really only were known as, you know, their biggest roles were as the host of Inner Sanctum Mysteries. Just try to think of a person tied with a particular show. Rod Serling did a lot of things. And he wrote a lot of things. And he wrote some movies. And he did Night Gallery, but he'll always be remembered for Twilight Zone, you know? So,
certainly more than anything else, yeah.
Certainly. And that reminds me of the Twilight Zone used black and white and used it tremendously to the power of lighting. There were a lot of shadows in there. And there was a particular episode with Dennis Weaver called Shadow Play, and tremendous episode. It's where he was on trial for murder, and just every time when they were about to sentence him, it started all over again. So he was reliving his murder trial over and over and over. And all the people that were in the jury and the judge and the defense lawyer and the prosecuting attorney, they were all in the same dream, but they were all in different roles the next time. So it was just really cool.
Oh, cool. Very cool.
Called Shadow.
I don't remember that one. I'll have to go back and watch that one again.
And Dennis Weaver, just absolutely, you know, you could understand why that guy won as many Emmys as he did, because he just, what an amazing actor, especially as early in television. He was on the Gunsmoke hit, what, about 55, 56 on television? And he wrote that for about 6 years, got at least one Emmy from there before he went on to do many other things, including Gentle Ben, and then eventually McCloud, and won some Emmys for that. Wonderful, wonderful. I love that. I still love McCloud.
Yeah, there was that time Dennis Weaver met up with Mick Jagger and Hugh O'Brien. Hugh O'Brien tripped. You know, he was a big man, right? And he fell on Dennis Weaver, and of course, you know what Mick Jagger said: "Hey, Hugh." Get off of McCloud.
Wow. You owe me for that setup.
Yes, I do. Believe me, I was wrestling with my conscience. Should I do this? And everyone
but
lost.
Dennis Weaver also did something that you talk about quite often, Duel.
Oh, yeah. What a fun movie that was. Made-for-television movie, one of Steven Spielberg's first projects,
first
really.
Yeah.
Definitely his first feature film, and quite thrilling, really. a very different kind of movie.
His directorial debut came in a pilot for a TV series. He did one of the three segments from the Night Gallery pilot movie.
Yep. And my guess is, and I apologize if this is the case, but I'm seeing a lot of people popping in, popping out, popping in, popping out. If there's connectivity problems, blame Blog Talk, man. Blame Blog Talk.
We always do, even when it isn't Blog Talk's fault. So go ahead and blame Blog Talk.
That's right. We are definitely into scapegoating, for sure. Let's wrap up our first story tonight from the Hermit's Cave. Let's run off to part two of House of the Purple Shadows and find out what happens to this poor guy.
Mr. Benson.
Yes, Mr. Lamont.
Before we go into the next room to talk to Mr. Davison's niece, I think there are a few things we should settle between us.
Yes, sir.
Yesterday ended a year since the disappearance of Mr. Davison. There's no doubt about it. He's dead.
He must be, sir.
He was kidnapped, which I'm inclined to think happened. Kidnappers must have gotten frightened and killed him.
There were no ransom notes received?
No, because they became frightened after they killed him.
But his body?
Don't know what they did with it. It's possible that though we dragged the river, it's still there. We've gone all over that before. That isn't what I want to talk to you about. It's his house.
Yes.
Police have been through it dozens of times since the day last year when you and I went through it.
I know they have.
If they saw or heard anything peculiar, they failed to mention it, as far as you and I are concerned.
I've never mentioned what happened to a soul.
Nor I. It's been so long now, I wonder if it could have been true.
I often think the same thing.
According to Mr. Davison's will, the house and part of his estate is to be deeded to his niece, Loretta Hathaway. She and her husband are in the next room. I think it best, Mr. Benson, that we never tell her what occurred to us that day.
I agree.
She and her husband are not wealthy. Money in the house would be very welcome to them. We shouldn't spoil it for him.
No.
All right. We'll go inside now and read the will to them. Mr. Hathaway will take over Mr. Davidson's business. Think you'll find him a nice man to work for. Come. Let's go inside.
Dan, you think you're going to like it here in this house?
It almost seems to be too grand for us.
I know it. Weren't you surprised to find out that Uncle Jim had willed us so much? Business, half his money, and this house?
Well, rather. But then, of course, there was no one else for him to leave it to.
I know. Dan, have you ever thought he might have committed suicide?
No. I never thought that.
Mother said he wasn't always as peculiar as he was during his last years.
What do you mean?
Well, I remember her saying that it was after he built this house and he and Aunt Mary moved into it that he began to change.
You know, there's something about this place that would make anybody change.
Now, what do you mean?
What I mean, Loretta, is that... Why, it's so blamed cold in here.
The house has been shut up for over 3 years, Dan.
I know, but it's warm outside. This house is like an icebox. We've had the windows open all day.
It'll get thawed out in a few days.
I hope so.
I suppose we better retire. You take charge of the office tomorrow, don't you?
Yes.
Poor Uncle Jim. I still keep thinking that he may have committed suicide. I've often wondered if they went through his desk and things to see if he left any notes.
Oh, yes, they've gone through his things dozens of times.
Dan?
Yes?
It was 3 years ago that Aunt Mary died, wasn't it?
Oh, about that.
She took an overdose of sleeping powder by mistake. Then 6 months after that, Mother died. Then Uncle Jim disappeared. A lot of tragedy in one family in a few years, isn't it?
I wouldn't dwell on that, Loretta. What are you doing?
I just thought I'd go through this desk to see if I could find anything that no one else has discovered.
I wouldn't look through those things tonight. Let's go upstairs.
I will in a minute. Dan? Dan, come here.
What is it?
Look at this. Look at this writing.
Well, what is it?
That's what I'm asking you.
Just purple marks on a piece of paper.
I know, but what peculiar marks. Like they were made with a fingernail and written in some foreign language. What do you suppose it is?
I haven't any idea. It's probably been there for ages. If it had any significance, the police would have used it.
I know, but it's lying right here on top of all these papers. As if it had been dropped here just recently. Dan, feel of that paper. It's ice cold.
Yes, it's like everything else in this house. Oh, come on. You can rummage through that desk tomorrow. I'm going upstairs. Do you realize it's nearly midnight?
Dan! Dan!
For heaven's sakes, what is it?
Look. Look. See that window blind? Look at it.
Why, it's moving.
Yes. Look. Look at it. It's moving up and down all by itself.
Oh, I see what it is, Loretta. There's something the matter with the roller. You've seen that happen to window curtains before. They fly way up to the top or way down to the bottom of the window when the roller's broken.
But, Dan, it was just as if some unseen hand moved that window curtain. That's what it was like. Some unseen hand moved that curtain.
Loretta and Dan see strange things, too. Can it be that Davison is still trying to make himself known to the people in his house? The hermit will tell you before the night is done.
Now, the hermit again.
Midnight in the house. Loretta and Dan are sleeping, but not... Well, listen.
No, I am not sleeping. I never sleep. You know that I've been wandering in this, my house, for over a year, living in hideous torture. Oh, I've tried to make someone understand, but it's useless. They only grow frightened, as Loretta did earlier this evening. But she didn't get frightened enough, no. I'll tell you why, what I've discovered in these long, endless hours that I've spent here. There's something strange about this place. Something horrible. You hear the wind? It's beginning again. About midnight every night, it springs up. There's a queer purple glow over everything. The cold sears me all through again, penetrating to my very marrow. I know. I have no form that you can see, or I can see, but I can feel pain just the same. Such pain as you never dreamed of in your normal world. Loretta and Dan will suffer the same transformation as I have if they don't get out of this house. I've been convinced for a long time now that it must have been true that my wife, Mary, realized there was something wrong in this house. That's why she took the sleeping powders that night. She took her own life through fear. But why didn't she warn me so that I could die? For as it is now, I may go on suffering like this for ages and centuries. There may be thousands of houses all over the world that are under a spell like this one is. There must be other people living in this strange world like I am. Here it comes again. This wind that lives in this world of purple shadows. I've got to warn Loretta and Dan. I've got to get them out of the house. I must propel myself up the stairs and open the door to their room. I'm climbing the stairs now. I can see in the night. I can see everything but myself. I think my hand is touching the banister. Now, I'm at the top of the stairs. I must open the door to the room. Oh, that wind. It's making me suffer such pain. I must warn them.
Turn up the night lamp.
It doesn't seem to make any difference. The light is getting stronger and stronger. And the wind is freezing me, freezing my blood.
Loretta, I feel it too. Let's get out of this room.
Help. I can't move. I can't move.
Loretta, I can't move either. I'm powerless.
Help. Someone help us. Help. I can feel my heart. whole body changing.
Loretta, what's happening to us?
Dan, help me.
I reached out for you and knocked over the lamp. Loretta, I can't see my hand anymore. I can't see my arms or my legs.
Look. Standing in this room. It's Uncle Jim.
Jim Davison.
Yes. You see me now. For you're changed the same as I am.
What's happened to us?
We've entered a strange world. This house, it's under some horrible spell. I've been in these shadows since the day I disappeared.
Uncle Jim, is there nothing we can do? Nothing?
There's our only hope, see? You knocked over that lamp, Dan. This room will soon be all afire.
Yes.
Let it burn. It may burn down the house and give us the freedom of death. It's our only hope, our only salvation. Death, give us freedom. Let us get out of this torture. Have mercy. Save us. Have mercy. Save us.
What's the news, Mr. Lamont? Did they find the bodies?
They've gone through the charred wreck of that house for hours. There's no trace of a body there.
Well, you think they got out before the house burned? Then where are they?
Benson, I don't think they got out.
But they didn't find their bodies, Mr. Lamont.
They didn't find them. But no one will ever hear of them again.
What do you mean?
It's difficult to explain to anyone but you. Because you and I know there was something strange about that place.
Yes.
I was with the firemen when we went through the wreckage. It was their bedroom. There was nothing there. But Benson, as we were going through it, smoke, of course, was smoldering there, but a huge purple flame sprung up and seemed to lose itself in the atmosphere. It startled me. I stepped back. Firemen thought I'd found something. Of course, I couldn't explain to them. I don't know that I can explain to you. But it was as if, well, as if something registered in my mind, and a voice said to me, "You'll never find their bodies. They're gone. Gone forever."
Liberated forever. They're free. No longer tortured. Turn on your lights. Turn them on. I'll be back. Pleasant dreams.
All characters, places, and occurrences mentioned in the Hermit's Cave are fictitious, and similarity to persons, places, or occurrences is purely accidental.
That is, except for the hermit, who's a real guy.
Maybe well, the hermit's a blue shadow. You never know.
You never know. Never know.
Yep.
Now, that was a creepy little story there.
It was a creepy story. You never thought we could have so much fun out of shadows, but yet, here we are in our second night of shadow play.
Yeah. And what we've already completed four complete radio shows, and we have a fifth for you.
I'll take a fifth. There we go.
That's right. We'll drink a fifth, but
there you go. That's right.
another very cool show. I know I've mentioned this more than once, but just the name of it kind of draws you in. I try to imagine what it would be like being a young fellow listening to this show back in the 1940s, and wanting to be in the Inner Sanctum. Like, if they had a fan club, oh, yeah, I want to join the Inner Sanctum. I could just see myself feeling that way about it.
Yeah, of course, they got their title. Hyman Brown wanted it to be the Creaking Door, which is what it became in South Africa, but he wanted to become the Creaking Door, and the sponsor didn't want the Creaking Door. So he said, well, what about Inner Sanctum Mystery? And it's not mysteries, it's mystery in the singular. And the sponsor, well, yeah, I like that. Well, of course, that belonged to, I think, Doubleday Publishing or one of the publishing houses. And Hyman went and worked to get permission to use it, and all he had to do was plug one of their books that they featured every month in their Inner Sanctum series. And growing up as a Ute, when I would visit my grandparents in Lima, I would go to the library and pull out some old radio programs they had on cassette because they were different than the ones that were available to me at home. And also, when you went through some of the books, darn if you couldn't, if you went through some of those books, you could see that some of them still had the outer label of Inner Sanctum Mystery, Mysteries on them. And those were the books that they were promoting every week on the radio show.
Some excellent history there, folks. If you like old stuff, well, thanks. That means you like me. No, if you like... If you like old stuff, those things are fun to find. I love antiquing. You find some amazing stuff. Some of the old radio magazines, it's cool.
Yep, the old movie magazines and radio. And it's so funny that, you know, even when you were in television, they looked down, or when you were in radio, you looked down on television when it first started out that, you know, not only was just a fad, but, you know, come on. You know, you can't take that seriously because the first live dramas were pretty hard because they're very constrictive. Radio was not constrictive at all. You'd say you build up this, like it takes place in a castle. Well, you build up in your imagination and with a few sound effects and the musical chords, you have this castle built up in your mind. You can't just do that on television. You need elaborate set and things like that. And so the early television, outside of The Lone Ranger, which was one of the earliest filmed series, you know, you had live broadcasting, and so much of that never survived. But yeah, even the radio actors were looking down on television actors. Movie actors did until the movies found out, hey, you know, we could resell all of our movies that we couldn't get anybody to watch anymore.
Yep. And that worked out rather well. That worked out rather well with shows like Lux Radio Theater and others, which gives us food for the Erie House Radio Drive-In. We'll be having another one soon, folks. We got some Alfred Hitchcock coming your way again. Yes, another Alfred Hitchcock night, at least one. And more.
Oh, we got some Thin Man and some things like that coming to us through the radio drive-in. So we got all kinds of fun. And,
appreciate you guys keep coming back, man. We really, really do. Big, big turnout last night. It was amazing. And a lot of folks here tonight, too. Thanks so much. As we move over to our next show, Inner Sanctum, which host do we have this time, Dave?
I'm pretty sure because of the date, this is a Paul McGrath, although that does have Mary. And that did start with with Raymond Johnson. And Raymond was with it from the beginning in 1941, and he left in 1945 to serve in the Army. I'm not sure whether he was drafted or whether a lot of actors went on their own before they were drafted, that way they kind of got to choose where they went. He was replaced by Paul McGrath after about 4 weeks, which was in between. It was Barry Kroger kind of was in between there. Who was a regular on this series, by the way, Paul McGrath. And then Paul McGrath stayed with us through the end of the series. Now, he never took the name Raymond. He was just Mr. Host or Your Host. And I have it. I just have to find a way to work it in because he also, being with Hyman Brown all this time, he also acted in at least one, if not more, of the CBS Radio Mystery Theaters as well.
Ooh.
So I will have to dig that one out.
Yes.
And so tonight we do have Mary, that Lipton tea lady, to go along with Mr. Host. And it just, I don't know, it's so odd because the stories are so spooky and strange and eerie. And then here's little Mary to brighten things up at the beginning and in the middle and at the end, and wishing everybody a good cup of tea.
But she did it masterfully, I think, and played off of the various iterations of Raymond or the host very, very well.
And it was so successful at the time that Lipton actually had them cut some transcription commercials that they could play in other shows or just throughout the day in other stations. And so every once in a while, you know, even though it wasn't Inner Sanctum, but you knew exactly who it was. It was Mr. Host and Mary from the Inner Sanctum Mystery. So that would also promote the show and as well as promote Lipton Tea. So everybody's a winner.
Everybody's a winner. And you will be too with this episode called The Shadow of Death.
And this one, do you do have a date for October 2nd, 1945?
Lipton Tea and Lipton Soup present Inner Sanctum Mysteries. Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum. This is your host to welcome you in through the squeaking door. We're having a party tonight for two of my favorite corpses. I call them Romeo and Juliet. They're newly dead, you know. Yes, she's the daughter of a famous society murderer, and he's the pride of the East Side Morgue. Oh, they're so happy together in their mausoleum built for two. And you should see the bridal casket.
Shame on you, Mr. Host, making fun of such a tragedy.
But, Mary, it was a touching ceremony. Of course, I stood up for the groom. Naturally, the poor fellow couldn't stand up for himself.
Oh, please. It's an occasion for tears, not for laughter.
That's right, Mary. Why, when the bride appeared wearing her grandmother's shroud, everyone had to be cheered up with Lipton tea.
Oh, that's enough. I will not have Liptons mentioned at a time like that. Lipton tea is for people who know how to enjoy life. These are the folks who really appreciate Lipton's famous brisk flavor. Yes, that word brisk, B-R-I-S-K, makes a big difference when you're sitting down to a cup of hot tea. Brisk means that Lipton tea tastes fresh and full-bodied, never flat or wishy-washy. I wish you'd try Lipton's, folks, even if you're not a regular tea drinker, because you just don't know how good tea can be till you know how good Lipton's is.
Well, Mary, let's tee off into tonight's story. It's called The Shadow of Death, and it's an original radio play by that boogie-woogie man, Robert Sloan. Yes, and our star tonight is Richard Widmark, who plays the role of Howard. All set? Then turn off the lights and let in the shadow of death. On a lonely dirt road that borders the village cemetery, a single car slows to a stop and parks in the moonless night. Inside it, a man leans back in his seat and reaches for the hand of the girl he loves.
Howard.
Yes, dear?
Why did you stop here? The cemetery's right over there.
Oh, I didn't notice.
You drove here last night, too.
Did I?
Yes.
Well, you're not frightened, are you?
Tonight I am. You've been so strange, so far away. I feel as if I hardly know you.
Darling, you mustn't feel that way.
What's the matter, Howard? There's something on your mind.
I'm going away, Marie.
Oh, no.
And I'm not coming back.
Howard, why?
Well, I don't really know if I can explain it. It seems so incredible, and yet I know it must be true.
What?
Something I've discovered about myself. Something strange and frightening, Marie. Wherever I go, I seem to cast a shadow. A shadow of death.
I... I don't understand.
No, I didn't either at first. I thought it was just a strange coincidence. But it isn't. It's me. I bring death wherever I go.
Oh, Howard, you don't really believe that.
Well, how can I believe anything else? Haven't you noticed what happens to every living thing I have around me?
No.
I can't keep a pet of any kind, a cat or a dog. Even a plant dies when I have it in the house.
Oh, darling, that's just your imagination. You've been working too hard. You need a rest.
No, I'm going away, Marie. I don't want any harm to come to you.
Oh, no, please. Nothing's going to happen to me. This is just...
What's the matter?
Well, nothing. I was just looking at the flowers in my corsage.
Good heavens. They're dead. You don't believe me either, do you, Doctor?
Well, let's not put it on that basis, Howard. After all, I've been trained to look for the physical causes of death, not the supernatural.
Then what do you think I should do?
Frankly, I'd like you to spend a few weeks away from these surroundings. Go up to the sanitarium I told you about. They'll take good care of you up there.
All right, Doctor. I'll make arrangements to go tomorrow. But I know it won't do any good.
You'll be surprised, Howard. 2 or 3 weeks from now, you look back on this as a...
Yes?
That's strange. Those goldfish in my aquarium. They're all dead.
Tell me the truth, Howard. Are you comfortable here in the sanitarium?
They don't believe me. They don't believe that people die when I dream about them.
People die?
Yes, you... didn't you know that? Every time I have a dream about someone, it's a sign of death. And the next morning when I wake up, I look in the obituary column and I see the name of the person I dreamt about.
Well, Howard, what have they done to you here?
Nothing, only they don't believe me. The dreams, I mean. I had to prove it to them this morning. And it made me feel very bad.
What made you feel bad?
The dream I had last night. I killed a man, Marie.
What?
I killed him in my dream.
Oh.
He was a good friend of mine, too. He lived right across the hall.
Oh, Howard, please. You've got to get hold of yourself.
But I'm afraid, Marie. I don't want to dream anymore.
Oh, darling, I can't bear to see you this way.
What way?
I'll get you out of here. I promise, Howard. I'll get you out of here today.
But, Marie, there isn't a chance of getting him out. He may have to stay in this institution for months.
Oh, no. Dr. Gerard, can't you see what's happening to him? He's losing his mind.
Well, I know he's taken a turn for the worse. That's all the more reason for keeping him here. It might be dangerous to discharge him now.
Then why don't you do something to help him?
We're doing everything we can. It's not easy. He persists in thinking he has this strange power of death. Nobody is able to convince him he's wrong.
What about the man across the hall? Howard said they were good friends.
That's another thing. They were good friends. But unfortunately, that man died this morning.
Come in.
Ah, good morning, Howard. How do you feel today?
Oh, much better, Doctor, much better.
No bad spells last night? No curious moods?
No, I feel fine. Almost well enough to go home.
Let me look at your eyes.
You will let me go home again, won't you, Doctor?
Yes, Howard, of course, of course. You, haven't had any of those dreams lately, have you?
No, not for a long time.
Are you sure?
Well, I did have one last night.
You dreamt that someone was dead?
Yes, I did, but I know it's not true. It can't be true.
Whom did you dream about, Marie?
No, Doctor. I dreamt about you. That's why I know I'm wrong. You're alive, Doctor. Don't you understand? You've proven it to
easy,
me.
Easy, easy now, Howard. Tell me about your dream.
Well, I dreamt I was going home, and all the people I'd killed in my dreams were alive again.
Yes, go on.
Well, somehow or other, I could see my house from this window, and everything was just as it was a long time ago. The flowers were growing, the dog was in the yard.
The one that was run over?
Yes, everything was well again, and I was well, too. That's why I wanted to go home. But you and Marie's mother didn't want me to.
She was in the dream, Marie's mother?
Yes, I don't know how she happened to be there, but she was.
That's all right, Howard. Go on.
Well, I started to leave, Doctor, but she held me back. She held my arms like this, and then you jumped up to ring the bell for help. But before you reached it, I was on top of you like this.
Oh.
I had my fingers around your throat, and I was squeezing it
so hard. I could feel your windpipe bending back until you couldn't breathe anymore.
Let go.
That's what you said last night, you fool. You wanted me to let go.
Until your face turned as blue as it is now. It was almost black before I let you go. But first I made sure you were dead. And then I dropped the body. You see, Doc, my dreams do come true.
Well, have you had any good dreams lately? Howard has. And you know, his dreams don't need interpretation. No, they need cremation. Say, it's a lucky thing that guy works on the night shift. It'd be awful if he had daydreams, too.
Good gracious, yes. His dreams not only walk, they commit murder.
Mary, I was about to say that. Please leave the jokes to me. How would you like it if I talked about tea?
Well, for goodness sake, I listened to the story, too. And I must say I'm glad I'm not his dream girl.
That does it. Friends, let me tell you about Lipton tea.
All right, you win. But it's only because I have something important to say about Lipton's. Folks, did you know that Lipton's is the largest selling brand in the whole world? Yes, and the reason for that is Lipton's well-known brisk flavor. You know, that word brisk is the tea expert's word for tangy, full-bodied tea, for Lipton tea. Lipton's is always fresh and spirited, never flat or wishy-washy. That's why lots of people drink it not just at mealtimes, but whenever they're taking it easy for a minute during the day. So, folks, try Lipton's and get acquainted with that brisk flavor.
Well, let's get back to our dream man and find out what he does in his waking moments. When we left him last, he had just done a little manual work on Dr. Gerard's windpipe. And now, as the good doctor lies comfortably on the sanitarium floor, Howard is in the process of going through his pocket.
I'll have to have the keys to your car, Doctor. I'll need them to get back home. I hope you won't mind if I hide you under this bed. It may take them a little bit longer to find the body if I do. Yes, who is it?
Dr. Frisbee, Howard. May I come in?
Well, yes. Yes, I'll open the door. What is it, Doctor?
Well, I was looking for Dr. Gerard. I thought he was in here.
Oh, yes, he was a moment ago. I think he went down the hall.
No, I just came from there. I guess he went back to his office.
Oh, yes, I guess he did.
How are you making out, Howard?
Fine, Doctor, fine.
You seem a little nervous. Your hands are shaking.
Oh, well, I...
You see, you've dropped your keys.
I'll get them.
It's all right, Howard. I wasn't going to take them away from you. But I am wondering how you happen to have any keys in your possession.
Well, they're not really mine.
Whose are they, Dr. Gerard's?
Yes. He left them here. I mean...
You mean you stole them from him?
No.
Now, come, Howard. You can't expect me to believe Dr. Gerard would give you any keys. Now, you'd better let me have them so I can give them back.
But I didn't...
Let me have them, Howard. Thank you.
You won't tell him I took them, will you?
No, Howard, I won't tell. But please don't take them again.
I'll go anyway. I'll get out onto the road and I'll get a hitch. Yes, sir. I'll get away.
I've got to speak to Marie.
Going down, mister? Guess not. Guess I'm... Oh, here comes another one. Hey, stop! Give me a ride, will you? Give me a ride, please, mister. Oh, it's stopping. Hey, wait for me, will you, mister? I'm coming. I'll be right there. Oh, gee, thanks, mister. You going into town?
Yes, Howard. But you're not.
Dr. Frisbee.
Yes, I've been watching you ever since you took those keys. I thought you'd try something like this.
Well, I had to, doctor.
I understand. Better get in the car, Howard, so we can talk this thing over.
All right.
You know, it's silly to run away from our place up there. If you really want to go home, all you have to do is ask.
I did ask.
When?
This morning. Oh, wait a minute. Don't start the car.
Why not?
There's a truck coming. In back.
Where?
Oh, Howard, let go of me, Howard!
I've got to have this car, Doctor. When I finished with it, I'll return it to you.
Kind of an abrupt ending of part one of The Shadow of Death.
Maybe got caught on his headphone cord there or something. I don't know.
Maybe.
Simon
I could have.
Simon & Schuster series, 1930. The first title was published in Simon & Schuster's Inner Sanctum Mysteries. It was I Am Jonathan Severner by Claude Houghton. Although the imprint Inner Sanctum also included serious dramas published with the blue covers and romance published with the red covers. Most of it was with mysteries published in green colors, covers. The Lee Wright was the editor of the series, and over the years, she introduced such authors as Craig Rice, Gypsy Rose Lee, Patrick Quinton, Thomas Sterling, and Anthony Bauscher. But that was going on since 1930, and then in 1941, when Hyman Brown went after Wright's to use the name, it was already 11 years in progress, and it certainly had to help book sales, and it didn't hurt the Inner Sanctum was already a well-known name because of the series of books. So.
Yep, and it was even referenced a few times. This show was so popular, it was referenced in other forms of pop culture, such as the Three Stooges.
That's right. Yeah, well, that was Shep, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, I do remember that. A total of 511 episodes over its 11-year run there. So, wow. I mean, and look at this. These are some of the people that were in here. Boris Karloff, who was in many of these. Peter Lorre, Paul Lucas, Claude Rains, Frank Sinatra, Orson Welles, Bela Lugosi, Mary Astor, Helen Hayes, Santos Ortega, Larry Haynes, Ted Osborne, Louis Van Ruten, Ralph Bell, Mercedes McCambridge, Barry Kroger, Arnold Moss, Leon Janney, Myron McCormick. Three quarters of these people went on to 22 years later appear in Radio Mystery Theater. Also had Richard Widmark in several of them. It was his earliest chances to shine was in Inner Sanctum Mysteries. Everett Sloan, Burgess Meredith, Agnes Moorehead, Ken Lynch, and Seymour, and of course the one episode of radio drama that is lost forever, but that Lon Chaney Jr. was in,
yes,
was on Sanctum.
So it's such a shame. Much like his father's, couple of his father's films, including London After Midnight. Now we got Missing Radio with Lon Jr. What a shame.
Yep.
Who knows? Maybe these things will surface someday.
You never know. You know, if I had a time machine, Dale, that's what I would want to do. I'd want to go back and collect all these shows that were lost, somehow get into the studio so you could record them digitally and have a chance to bring them back and share them right here on Erie House Radio.
Oh, that would be cool. Way cool. But alas, nothing but a fantasy, and we've got more radio fantasy for you as we get ready to wrap up our second tale. I do like this. He's my second favorite host of Inner Sanctum, this gentleman tonight.
Yeah, he's good.
He plays off of Mary well, but the other guy was just a little... His approach was even more relaxed than this guy's, you know, like with his sinister humor.
Yes.
Mm.
It seems like he didn't try as hard as what Paul McGrath tries, you know?
Yeah. It's like he didn't have to.
Yes, exactly. exactly.
Yeah. And with that being said, let's go ahead and wrap up this episode. We'll have some more fun when we get back as we wrap up The Shadow of Death from Inner Sanctum Mystery.
Hello?
Hello, Mrs. Walker.
Who's this?
Howard. You remember me, don't you?
Howard, where are you?
In a telephone booth around the corner.
You're not in the sanitarium?
No, I've been discharged. Dr. Gerard said I could go.
You mean you're well again?
Yes, I'm completely cured.
Oh. Oh, I see.
You don't sound very happy about it, Mother. Where's Marie?
She's out on a date.
When will she be back?
Well, I don't know, Howard. She didn't say.
I've got to see her again, Mrs. Walker. I've got to see her once more before I die.
Before you die?
Yes, I haven't much longer to live. Now, where is she?
Well, I think she said she was going to movies.
You're lying.
I'm not, Howard. I just can't be sure. But if you go to the theater, you might find her there.
You don't want me to see her, do you?
No, not until I've spoken to Dr. Gerard.
Why? Don't you believe me? Don't you believe I'm well again?
No, Dr. Gerard...
Never mind what he said. Mrs. Walker, you mustn't dislike me. I'm very fond of you.
You are, Howard?
Yes. I've been thinking a lot about you lately, while I was in the sanitarium. Last night, I even had a dream about you.
Keep ringing that number, operator. I've got to locate Dr. Gerard.
Why the hurry, Mrs. Walker?
Howard, how did you get in here?
Through the back door. Put that phone down, please.
But I...
Put it down, I said.
Yes.
You lied to me about Marie being at the movies, Mrs. Walker.
I didn't mean to, Howard. I told you I wasn't sure she was there.
Where is she? This time I've got to know.
Howard, how dare you? Get your hands off me.
I'm not in a gentle mood, Mrs. Walker. I'm fighting against time.
You've done something wrong, Howard. You've escaped from the sanitarium.
No, I've done more than that, Mrs. Walker. I killed a man.
Howard!
Two men, three men. I can't remember how many it was, but there's going to be one more.
Howard, you wouldn't kill me, would you?
Wouldn't I? What have you done to deserve your life?
Let
it ring.
But that may be my call.
Your call is coming now, Mrs. Walker.
Howard, please. Put down that knife.
Will you tell me where Marie is?
I told you, I don't know. I don't know.
Then I'll wait for her. Right here.
Howard, you can't. No, you can't. Oh!
Yes, I can, Mrs. Walker. Hello?
Hello, this is Dr. Frisbee Sanitarium calling. Is Mrs. Walker there?
I'm sorry. You have the wrong number. Marie, darling.
Howard. Howard, what are you doing here?
I've been waiting for you to come home, darling. Aren't you glad to see me?
Oh, yes, of course I am. It was such a surprise, I couldn't catch my breath for a minute. Where's Mother?
Upstairs. Why?
I just wanted to know.
You had no other reason?
No. Howard, why are you staring at me?
I'm not really staring. I'm just looking at you, darling. It's been such a long time since I've seen you. I'd almost forgotten what you were like.
Well, let's go inside.
No, if you don't mind, darling, I'd rather go for a ride.
You're all right, aren't you, Howard? I mean, you're completely well now.
Oh, can't you see I am?
Yes, but yes.
Then let's not wait any longer, darling. Come on, we'll go for a ride.
Getting late, Howard. Don't you think we ought to go back?
No, not yet, Marie. You just keep driving. These few moments we have together, maybe I'll... Marie, why are you stopping here?
We're low on gas, dear. I don't want to get stuck on the highway.
Oh.
Yes'm?
Fill it in.
You'd better fill her up.
Right.
And have you got a telephone here?
Yes, I'm right inside.
Thank you.
Wait a minute, Marie. What do you want with a telephone?
Oh, I was going to call my mother. She'll be worried about me.
Oh, no, she won't. She knows you're with me. Besides, she went out for a little while.
Well, maybe she's back by now. It won't hurt to call, will it?
No, I guess it won't.
I'll be right back, Howard.
Well, hurry, darling. I want to be with you as much as I can.
Yes, I won't be a minute.
Number, please.
Operator, quick, get me the police. This is an emergency.
Yes, ma'am, right away.
Headquarters, Sergeant Dunn speaking.
Sergeant, listen carefully. I won't have time to repeat it. The murderer of Dr. John Gerard is right here in a filling station on Route 6 at the Hadley intersection. What shall I do? I can't keep him here.
Does he know you're onto him?
No. No, he doesn't know I read the story in a newspaper just before I got home. He was waiting there for me, and I haven't been able to get to a phone since.
Well, don't take any chances. He's a homicidal maniac. Don't even try to stall him if he wants to leave.
No.
Just stay where you are, and we'll be over there in 4 minutes.
Oh, no, that's no good. He won't let me stay here. He'll take me with him.
Marie.
Oh, he's calling for me now.
Marie!
Just a moment, Howard. What can I do, Sergeant? What can I do?
Give me the description of the car, quick.
It's a dark blue sedan. License number 468J3. We've been going east on Route 6. Oh, I can't talk anymore. He's coming.
Marie, for heaven's sake, what kept you so long?
Oh, I had a hard time getting the number. There was something wrong with the lines.
But you were talking to somebody.
Yes, I was speaking to Mother.
You were speaking to your mother?
Yes. She told me not to stay out too late.
You're lying, Marie.
No, I'm not, Howard. I talked to her.
You talked to the police. That's why you lied to
no.
me.
No.
You did. Your mother's dead.
Howard.
I know, because I killed her.
No.
Be quiet. Get back into the car. You're coming with
no.
me.
No, Howard. Howard, you're hurting my arm.
Get back in the car.
You leave her alone.
Keep out of this, you fool.
Leave her alone.
I told you to keep out of this.
Howard, no.
Hey, put down that wrench.
I'll put it down.
Oh, Howard, how could you?
Never mind. Get into the car.
Howard, why are you stopping here?
Don't you know where we are, Marie? This is the cemetery.
Where we stopped before.
Yes. I like it here. It's so quiet and peaceful among the dead. Let's walk through the grounds.
Howard, please.
Why not, Marie? We're among friends. So many of our loved ones are buried here. It's nice to be near them. Come on, Marie.
All right, Howard.
You know, darling, we haven't much more time together. The shadow of death has fallen across our path.
You said something like that before, but you never told me why.
I'm being selfish, Marie. I know I have to die, and I want you to come with me.
Why do you have to die, Howard?
Because I haven't been true to myself, darling. I haven't been true to this power I have.
The power of death?
Yes. I've helped it along sometimes. Like that dream I had about my friend in the sanitarium. Like the flowers in my garden. Like those fish at Dr. Gerard's.
You killed them?
Yes. I knew they were going to die. But I shouldn't have helped them. That's why I'm being punished.
But Howard, why are you punishing me?
I don't want to die alone, Marie. We've been away from each other so much, darling. I want us to be together from now on.
But
don't be afraid, darling. I'll be gentle, Marie. So gentle.
But you're making a mistake, Howard.
No.
You are. You've forgotten what you've done. You can't kill me, darling.
Why not?
Why, good heavens, Howard, don't you remember? Don't you remember that day at the sanitarium? You said you dreamt about me.
No. No, I couldn't have.
Yes, you did. Didn't they tell you what happened?
No.
Your dream. Your dream, it was true. That's why you can't kill me now.
Marie, you mean...
Yes, Howard. I'm dead.
I can't believe it.
Oh, you must believe it. Here, look at this tombstone. My grave is right here.
No.
Read what it says. Read the name on it.
It's your name, Marie. Your name. Marie Walker.
Yes.
Then you really are dead.
I told you I was, Howard. The shadow of death passed over me.
Then let it pass over me.
Hey, got him, Sam. Got him the first shot. Keep out of the way, miss. He may not be dead yet.
No, I'm sure he's dead.
Well, you certainly had a close call. Took us all this time to locate your car. Finally spotted it on the road. You all right?
Yes, I'm all right. Yeah. The name of my grandmother's tombstone saved me.
How's that?
Oh, it doesn't matter.
Say, that's funny.
What?
This guy was shot through the shoulder. My bullet wounds weren't serious enough to kill him.
What do you mean?
Well, I know it sounds crazy, but my shots didn't kill him. He was dead before I hit him.
What a shame. Wasting two perfectly good bullets on a guy that was dead all the time. Well, at least they won't have to go far to bury him. Here's one villain who died practically in the middle of his own plot. Isn't it funny how many of our stories seem to take place in cemeteries? You know, Mary, I think you ought to open up a concession in the cemetery. And you know what you could sell. Hmm?
Don't say it. Don't you dare. You know very well that the place to buy Lipton tea is and always will be your neighborhood grocery store. And, folks, that reminds me, you'll find it wiser to buy Lipton's in the larger, more economical size packages. That way you not only save money, but you also make sure that you won't run short on a beverage that's really a household necessity. Brisk-flavored Lipton tea.
Before I put the skeletons back in their closets, I'd like to give you a parting word of advice. A body should never be left alone at the morgue at night. After all, it might become slab happy. Oh, by the way, this month's Inner Sanctum mystery novel is The Whistling Legs by Roman McDougald. Yes, and let me tell you about next week's Inner Sanctum story, directed by Hyman Brown and brought to you by Lipton Tea and Lipton Soup. You know, usually our stories are about people who live 6 feet under the ground. But for next week, we've dug a lot deeper. In fact, it takes place in China. And as a special added attraction, we've unearthed a new kind of character for you. Unearthed is right. This guy's been dead for 20 centuries. And now it's time to close the squeaking door, so good night. Pleasant dream?
Ladies, if your child comes home from school for lunch, you want to give him a quick but appetizing meal. And that's why you should serve Lipton's noodle soup. You see, Lipton's takes no time to prepare, and yet it has a fresh-cooked, old-fashioned chickeny flavor. And it's just swimming with tender golden egg noodles. Your children will love Lipton's grand homemade taste. So don't forget to serve Lipton's noodle soup. And don't forget to tune in next Tuesday night for another Inner Sanctum Mystery.
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
And this is Erie House Radio.
I used to... I have a lot of that chicken soup. That was the instant chicken soup. That was kind of the ramen noodle of our day, Dale.
It was. I loved that soup as a kid. Lipton's, man. That was like a real treat for me. And then sometimes if you had them, you put in extra noodles. Oh, man, you had it going on.
Yeah, and it was kind of a mainstay in college either, too, because it doesn't, you know, when you're looking for something cheap to eat, you know, pull that soup out of a box and you got something there. You know,
yep.
I had to save money. Had to save money for beer.
That's right.
Gotta have his priorities.
I like a man who knows his priorities. Absolutely.
Oh. where both my sons, I think, spent their time, plenty of time with Raymond Noodles. And so Lipton, see, unfortunately, Lipton soup is kind of, was kind of passe at that time, you know.
Yep. And many of you, I'm sure, are getting ready for Gar the Ghoul, Horrible Horror Starring Gar the Ghoul, coming up in probably about, oh, say, 10 minutes or so.
Yes.
That's our partner who's with us Friday night. Sometimes he drops in on Saturdays. Hard to do. The guy does a lot of prep work. In the meantime, give us a call if you like at 646-378-0264. We still got just under 10 minutes to kill. kill.
You haven't killed enough tonight? Jeez, and
no.
Crackers.
No.
Wow.
It's never enough. I'm a
just
glutton
so
for
much.
Gore.
Glutton for it. Yeah, it's
yes.
These Inner Sanctums just always things. And you know what I usually did when I heard of Inner Sanctum? It was I usually tried to listen to them in the dark. Much like, you know, your lights out. I tried to listen to Inner Sanctums in the dark. To me, that was the best way to listen. You know, I know when I would go sneak into my dad's office, sort of was in a part of just on a tri-level there. And if you shut off the lights, even during the day, it was really kind of dark there. And if you would wait till like late afternoon, and then the only light you would see was the little light from his tape recorder that I would be playing the cassettes on. So, yeah. It's a wonderful, wonderful way to spend an evening is with these old radio programs. And if you don't have enough or have them at your fingertips, please go to the archives at Erie House Radio, blogtalkradio.com/DaleK. And we've just got, like we said last night, about 3.5 years of archives there. There's a lot to catch up on, but, you know, hey, what are you doing right now, right?
That's right.
Some of us are working from home, and some of us are just home. And if you're just home, go in there. You know, you won't hurt your unemployment check any. And make the time go a little faster. I think I mentioned earlier before we went on how where does the time gone? And Dale says, well, the busier you stay, the quicker time goes. And I told Dale, I don't think I've ever been bored.
and you haven't, and that's why the time seems to fly so fast, as it does here. Even though. We have time for a little bit of something here. Maybe
yeah,
a little music.
Say, why don't I get here? Let me reach my pocket, get you out a dime, a whole dime for the Erie House jukebox there. Pull a song out.
All right. Let me see.
There you go.
Got to find the slot here. Hold on.
Who's been drinking now?
For instance, I noticed that a lot of you, Joe, I don't know how many, have asked for Lionel Hampton. Well, I'm awfully glad to announce that he's right here. And I wish I knew enough about music to tell you about the intricate movements that he has. But anyhow, the only thing I know is that the boy is hotter than a $2 pistol. Now, anyhow, here he is, Lionel Hampton and his band playing Flying Home. Thank you. Thank you, boy. That was wonderful. I haven't heard anything like that since one time down home a truckload of empty milk cans crashed into a carload of live ducks.
I think it sounded a little better than that. But Lionel Hampton there with...
Yeah, and good old Bob Bazooka Burns was the host on that particular... episode of probably Command Performance, I would guess.
When will we next see Weirdness Really Bad Movie?
Not this weekend. I have been preempted by marijuana. I'm sure that's what the case is. That something about 4:20 being associated. You know, this is where my naivete runs, and I have no... What does 420 have to do with marijuana? Anybody can explain that to me?
I know a little about it, not much. It was like a police code or something like that when they busted people, and somehow I think it became a pop cultural reference. And then later it meant, well, that's when school was out. That was the time to go and smoke some of that devil's weed.
Oh, okay.
I believe. Yeah. You can correct me if you think.
Don't look at me. I have no idea. But I think I've been schooled just a little bit, if nothing else. And I think that looking forward to seeing Gar the Ghoul coming up here in a little bit. I'll be back in 3 weeks at the Vortex.
Yep, and thanks again, CW, Fogsbane, Linda Lou, GGSI Paper, Serpent Society 9, and also Clark's Credit Chat Late Nights for dropping in. Hello, Jim, and visiting with us. If you're just getting in, you missed some really good classic radio. You'll have to drop in sooner sometime and join us. We're here every Friday night, 8:30 p.m. Eastern, live, and then Saturdays at 6:30 p.m. Eastern, live. Or somewhat dead. See you next weekend. Bye-bye. You're only going to get part of Vincent Price.
The castle lights are growing dim.
That's right, and there's no one left. So bye. See you next time. I decided to wing it, you know?
Okay. It wasn't my fault. I shut up early enough.
No. That's all me. That's all me.
That's all right. No problem there. Oh, shoot.
Been that kind of day. Ugh.
Well, yeah, I've been running today. This is a day. I actually ran up to Mayfield Heights. I got a computer for my 83-year-old father, hoping that he can learn this because his other one is so slow. I get more gray hair just waiting for the next program to come up. So
no, jeez, yeah.
And the thing is, he has to do it with me around. I've hopefully made some shortcuts on this that will make it a lot easier for him. And even put a shortcut in, Dale, to blogtalkradio.com/DaleK. So he can listen to us as well.
Oh, wow. Son, you need to quit hanging around that guy. He sounds a little weird.
Says, no, Gar's my friend.
Oh, no. I was referring to myself. We love you, Gar.
We do.
Break a leg tonight. Break a leg.
Yeah, just don't break the microphone. That's all. Yeah.
No, that's right.
No, it makes it tough. Pantomime does not work. Well,
that's why I don't do mic drops. Mics are too expensive.
I tell you what, Dale, you have to explain it to me because being basically a lifelong radio guy, what the heck is this dropping the microphone crap all about?
Okay. So somebody, I have no idea where it started. It's like it's a 2 or 3 year old thing now, at least, maybe longer.
Yeah,
I don't know. I'm old. But it's like adding a certain, like, it's when you make a statement or you've done something like excellent that can't be topped, you just do a mic, you drop the mic, meaning, ha, I'm done, top that. Or, you know, there's no response to this. I've just answered everything. Boom. Kind of a thing. It's a certain finality. It's a statement of finality that this topic is over.
Okay.
It can mean a few things. I think it can mean a few things.
Well, I tell you what. It's not something that I really like.
Yeah,
I'm
not a fan.
How many years did you use a microphone there?
Yeah.
Did you ever think of taking it out and dropping it on the floor?
No, like I said, well, first of all, I was a nightclub jock, so it's not like I was raking in tons and tons of cash. So I'm like, yeah, I'm not breaking this microphone to look like I'm a smartass or something, you know. Pardon my French, but. It's kind of smartassedness to a degree.
Yeah.
Be dropping mics. But hey, you know, if you want to do that, okay, whatever. But just not a fan.
Yeah. I just never understood it. And now that I understand it, I don't like it any better than I liked it before. I didn't understand it.
Yeah, I didn't imagine you would, because I think sometimes we're, you and Gar and I are cut from largely the same cloth. I mean, we're not clones or anything, but. We do have similar thoughts, similar values.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we're all weird.
That's the brotherhood. That's
yes.
That's the brotherhood. Last night's after show, I really got a kick out of him, Professor Feather, talking about how well the three of us just worked together and how we had fun. And that really tickled me. I thought that was really cool to hear from somebody who's kind of a neutral observer at this point, you know?
Well, and talented enough where his opinion is noteworthy to me, at least, from what I know of him. He's been around a while. He's very, you know, he and Tar are so talented. I think as horror hosts.
Yeah. Yeah. And good guys on top of that, you know?
Yes. Yep.
Some people have really super big heads. They do not. And actually, being an internet horror host, which is what we've kind of been relegated to at this point, why the heck would that give you a big head? I don't understand.
Please. I'm glad I I'm just glad. That's all. I'm glad.
But no, I think we all enjoy what we do, and we enjoy getting together here and collaborating every weekend. You know, hopefully, and I know more than anybody else, I have Garf. It worries he steps on somebody's toes. I think I've checked with you one time or two, but you know, there was a time when Garf was like every other weekend, "Hey Dave, we still okay?" Yeah, we're fine.
Yeah.
Oh shoot!
We should have messed with him. No, you fouled everything up. What the blazes?
Yeah, but we would not do that.
No.
So actually, we do all have I feel we have a mutual respect for each other and each other's talents, and that's you know, and that's one of the reasons I think this show works the way that it does.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, gang, if you're listening, this is an amazing hoot to do, and to be, you know, to have the opportunity to share these stories, you know. When I find something that I like that's new to me, Dave's been interested in radio for years, it's such a thrill for me to want to share it with other people. Oh, you got to check this out. This is great entertainment, you know.
Let me ask you this. Do you get as much thrill out of sharing these as you do when you had and will be, you know, again at some point, doing your streaming TV show, TV program?
Wow. That's, you know what? That's a tough one to answer. There's different aspects.
There's different things in different modes, yes. And
you know, obviously without the visual medium and hours of editing, this is easier. But
yeah.
Easier is not always more fun. You know what I mean? It's certainly more rewarding, I think, in the end when you're working on something, especially when it's something long and involved, maybe with a lot of trick editing and so forth. And then it's very, very rewarding to put in a ton of time and get the results you were hoping for, or at least close to it. At least somewhat close, maybe a little.
Well, that's why it's fun every once in a while to do a production, you know, something like you're where and when we throw in the commercials and the nobody's in left field, things like that. You know, those are fun little things that add up to make it just a little extra special, at least on that night, you know.
Yeah, we do try to add a little fun stuff here and there, huh?
Yes, absolutely. Besides our regular lunacy, we have that lunacy as well.
Yep. And more to come, but in the meantime, maybe you want to... Yeah, we're not going anywhere. Sorry about your luck. we're going to be doing this for a while.
You can pay us to go away, but we'll just come up with a different name, so, you know.
Yes.
Go ahead and pay us.
We'll reappear elsewhere just to drive you crazy.
You can't buy us off completely, but we can be bribed.
Yes.
We can be bribed. You know.
For limited time only, we are accepting bribes here at the... call us at 646. Yeah.
All right, sir. Well, I think I'm going to wander over to see what our good buddy Gar is up to tonight.
I'm going to take another stab at logging in. I don't know why that website hates me. It doesn't recognize me. It doesn't recognize my email address, and then it doesn't send me any kind of a...
Well, why doesn't... I was going to say, why trying to re-come... Well, I don't know. I'm sure you have. But good luck!
Good luck in prison, folks!
And
we'll see you next time.
And you know who else wishes you good luck is Mr. James Durante.
Good night. Good night. Good night. It's time to say good night. Good night. Good night. What more to say but good night? We've had a few laughs.
and it's time for toodaloo. Arrivo, up we the same, and ink-a-tink-a-doo.
Good night. Good night. Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.
And now, folks, it's time to say good night. We sincerely appreciate your patronage
night.
And hope we've succeeded in bringing you an enjoyable evening of entertainment. Please drive home carefully and come back again soon. Good night.